This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the In Focus podcast. I'm your host, G. Sampath. Plastics pollution is a major global crisis with deadly repercussions for human health, marine life, and climate change. In March 2022, the United Nations set the ball rolling for the conclusion of a global plastics treaty by the end of 2024. And later this month, we have the penultimate session of the Intergovernmental Negotiating Committee, or INC, where 175 countries will negotiate a legally binding treaty to combat plastic pollution. So what are the issues under discussion in these negotiations? What has been India's position on these issues? And given the magnitude of the plastics crisis in India, are we on the right track in terms of our government's positioning? We discuss all these questions in detail in this episode of In Focus. And we have with us Satyarupa Shekhar, a public policy advocate whose interests include urban governance, data justice, and plastics pollution. Satyarupa, thank you so much for joining us and welcome back to In Focus.
Thanks, Sampath. Good to be back.
So to start with, Satyarupa, I was wondering if you can give us a quick overview of what exactly are the core issues, the main issues and the main objectives of this ambitious global plastics treaty, which is underway to bring this plastic situation under control.
So the treaty, the decision to negotiate an international legally binding instrument, like you said, was taken in March 2022. The UN resolution is 5/14. In that resolution, actually, the objective is to reduce plastic pollution across the life cycle, as well as, whether it's terrestrial plastic pollution or marine plastic pollution. Now, the instrument actually will have several parts. You know, the document itself is quite detailed. Aside from the preamble, the objective, definitions and principles and scope, there are certain other sections to this instrument. One of those very important sections in that instrument will be around the core obligations or what are called control measures or voluntary approaches. And these could include things like phasing out or reducing the demand of primary plastic polymers, banning and phasing out specific plastic products or chemicals and polymers of concern, you know, reducing microplastics. And then it goes on to talking about waste management, et cetera. The instrument will also talk about the means of implementation and what kind of capacity building or technical assistance some countries might require. Some countries might require financial assistance or technology transfer. And finally, you know, the document will talk about, it usually will have a list of annexes. It could include lists of problematic plastics or lists of specific polymers and chemicals of concern or criteria for determining what should be identified to eliminate or phase out and what timelines. You know, so this is the overall structure of the instrument. And like you said, the fourth round of negotiations is scheduled to happen in late April in Ottawa in Canada.
Right. I mean, so there is going to be a preamble. There are going to be a lot of definitions, principles, lists of various kinds of plastics and also, most importantly, obligations. And if obligations for various countries and also, like we've seen with the climate treaties, what kind of financial and technical assistance? I think there's a lot of stuff to sort of unpack here. So coming to India's position, Satyarupa, on this entire thing, and we know that there is a major plastic crisis which is happening here. We've had the series of various kinds of bans, local, regional, state-wise, etc. So what exactly are India's positions on the core issues or the core debates that are underway in these negotiations?
So far, Sampath, India has made about, three written submissions, two of which have been around the rules of procedure, calling for a consensus-based decision-making process rather than a voting-based decision-making process.
So consensus means that wouldn't consensus mean that no decision is going to be very difficult to arrive at a decision, right? Voting it can be more fast, quick. It's just a majority thing, and a consensus is going to be a little bit more I don't know, tiresome, isn't it?
Absolutely, you hit the nail on the head. This is really a delaying tactic, and if we just had a two-third majority, we can move things faster. The problem with consensus is that there are certain business or economic interests that can then hold the entire treaty negotiations to ransom. So unless everybody would agree, we can't really move forward, right? And so I think there is precedence for in other multilateral environmental agreements where voting has been an acceptable form of decision making.
Okay. So one is these rules of procedure, and India is insisting on a consensus kind of approach. What are the other main things that we have been sort of from our submissions?
Yeah. So there are four other broadly I would categorize these as four issues. First one is that India does not want any binding targets or any caps on the production of plastic polymers. And that it does not want any sort of regulation with respect to substances, materials, or the chemicals that needs to be used in this. And only, the focus needs to really be only on the downstream. So what they're saying is that no upstream measures need to be accounted for within the scope of the treaty. Now, this is, of course, against, the original mandate, which says that it would look at the entire life cycle of plastics. The second aspect that India has made a point about is that, of course, there should be some financing mechanism provided to countries to transition from plastics to alternatives. But in addition, what it has said is that this really, alternatives really need to depend on the accessibility, affordability of the alternatives themselves. So while, on the face of it, it looks like a very appropriate, demand, I think when we can talk about this later as well, that India has actually used this to ring fence conversations on real substitute and real alternative and actually promoting, further dependence on plastic. The third has been on voluntary measures. So they have said that, countries should be free to determine what they do and how fast they do take some actions. And the last has been that India has talked about trade and the WTO rules not being violated in promoting, environmental protectionism or environmental protection, sorry, not protectionism, environmental protection.
Right. So, I mean, broadly speaking, from what you're saying, Sirupa, I mean, what I'm getting is that India is, despite the scope of the whole instrument being about the life cycle of plastic being, brought into the picture in terms of how we can address it, India is not interested in upstream aspect of production, etc. No cap on production, no cap on what kind of materials are used, etc., etc. Now, coming to this whole trade and WTO rules related concerns of India, what exactly are we concerned about? What kind of a conflict do we foresee between the proposed treaties provisions and the existing WTO rules that India is worried about?
So India has an unsubstantiated claim that there is a conflict between the WTO rules and the proposed instrument, the plastic treaty provision. Actually, that is not really the case. In February of this year, in February 2024, we had the 13th Ministerial Conference of the WTO. And there was a statement that actually the WTO released after the Ministerial Conference that's recognized that the Intergovernmental Negotiating Committees is going to be leading the process to develop solutions related to plastic pollution. Right. So this is coming out of the WTO itself. It's being welcomed by civil society across the world. If you look into a little bit around the WTO rules themselves, there are certain technical barriers to trade that, want to ensure that there are no unnecessary obstacles to trade. But at the same time, it recognizes that WTO members have the right to implement measures to achieve legitimate policy objectives, such as the protection of human health and safety or the protection of the environment, right? So this is actually enshrined into the WTO. And, after the 13th Ministerial Conference, we actually have the Deputy Director General stating that several members of the WTO have already undertaken several trade measures on plastic pollution. We're talking about more than 100, I think 130 measures that have actually been already undertaken by countries across the world. Over 80% of these have come from the least developing countries and developing countries, right? So, you know, and there has been no dispute within the WTO about restrictions on trade around plastic. And I think, you know, the fact that India continues to make an issue out of this seems to need a little bit more investigation, I suppose. But what is interesting is that the Deputy Director General also mentioned that there is an informal dialogue on plastics within the WTO. And so far, 78 countries have participated in shaping what the WTO rules with respect to trade on plastics would entail. And, you know, I guess unsurprisingly, India is not among the countries that has participated in that dialogue.
Okay, that's interesting. I mean, we are on the one hand concerned about conflict with WTO rules, but we are not part of the forum within WTO, which is looking at these aspects, with which already has 78 countries.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Okay, interesting. Now, moving on to the actual, you know, the big picture with regard to the negotiations. I mean, from whatever little research I could do, there seems to be like two divergent approaches. Like in climate, you have, you know, the oil petroleum lobby, and then you got the environmental lobby. Here there seems to be like when it comes to combating plastic pollution, there is one which wants to focus only on the downstream aspect. Once plastic waste is generated, how do you tackle it? You know, burn them, or, you know, recycle them, or whatever it is. And then there is the other approach, which is to focus on the entire life cycle of plastic, starting with the polymer production, you know, the production, the design, and then all the way down to downstream aspect of, you know, production of elimination of waste or managing waste. So, I mean, is there a clear conflict between these two approaches in these negotiations that you've seen so far? And what are the pros and cons of each of these approaches? And I mean, we already know, I think India stands for the downstream approach. So what are the pros and cons of either of these approaches?
Well, I guess we should be clear that the biggest argument in favor of a solely downstream focus is for unregulated profits for the fossil fuel industry and for the plastics industrial complex, right? They stand to make profits at every stage of the plastic supply chain, right from the extraction and refining of you know, fossil fuels, whether it's coal, gas, or oil, to the manufacturing of plastics, as well as the disposal. Even shipping companies are being paid to transport plastic waste from developed countries to developing countries to, you know, so-called under the guise of recycling. So, you know, and these most of these countries are Asia and Asia and Africa, including India.
So what happens to the plastic which is shipped from developed countries to developing countries under the guise of recycling? We know, I mean, we did in our previous podcast, we discussed recycling is mostly a sham. So what happens to this plastic which is headed to a developing country for recycling once it lands there?
You know, in the history of plastics, of all the plastics that has been produced in the world so far, only 9% has been ever recycled, right? So that should already give us some idea of whether recycling is possible or not. What happens to the plastic that is shipped is to these many of these countries? There are horrifying stories of all of this plastic being dumped in either paddy fields in Indonesia, Thailand, Cambodia, Vietnam. You can actually see paddy fields full of plastic. It's in fact sometimes more lucrative for paddy farmers to actually allow their fields to be used for dumping this kind of plastic than for growing paddy. You know, that's the impact of this trade, the imbalance of this trade. Some of that plastic is actually getting downcycled. You know, plastic can be melted and, you know, thermoset into other kinds of plastics. In Chennai, for example, what my research showed is that a lot of this plastic was actually getting used to make kodams or pots of that are used to then store water. And many of the communities that are using kodams or pots to store water are low-income communities. And what we are seeing is actually, you know, this material that and leaches a lot of chemicals into, whether it's water, whether they use it for making toys. So it's actually very toxic. Both the process of making it into something else, as well as the use of that recycled material, it's not stable. And we've actually had, FSSAI in India actually saying that recycled plastic cannot be used for packaging food. which means that they are very much aware that it actually is quite harmful for packaging.
Right. Yeah. Going back to my question, sorry, I interrupted you with this.
Not at all. So that is really the argument in favor of a solely downstream measure is unregulated, unrestricted, unlimited profits for the plastics and the petrochemical industry. The industry is actually very much similar and the same as that which is participating in the climate negotiations. It is the fossil fuel industry. It is plastic manufacturers who are using fossil fuel to make plastics, and it is the disposal, the companies that have interest in disposal technology. Now, the arguments in favor of a full lifespan instrument, an instrument that covers the entire lifespan of plastics, obviously has several benefits. One is that this is really going to be the only way that we can address the triple planetary threats. Right, so we have the triple threats, which are climate, biodiversity loss, and pollution. And we really need to curb both our use of fossil fuel as well as novel entities like chemicals that are being used in plastics. It's always better to go with a precautionary principle. Unless we've actually established that something is safe for use, we should rather not use it. And we have these kind of regulations when it comes to drug. There is a lot of regulation. There's no country in the world that is not going to have regulation on opium or even cigarettes, right? You need doctor's prescription for several kinds of drugs. We're talking about levels of toxicity that need to be regulated. A couple of months ago, PlusChem, a report came out about more than 16,000 chemicals are being used to make plastics, right? And unless we regulate both the production of the plastic polymer as well as the chemicals and additives that are used to produce those plastic polymers, we are not going to be actually able to address the threats to climate, biodiversity.
So right now there is no regulation of plastics production and what chemicals are used.
There are certain regulations, but I think it's less than 10% of the chemicals that are used are actually globally regulated. And the other problem is that we actually do not have a full disclosure of what kinds of chemicals are actually being used in the production of plastic. So it's up to scientists to actually tell us these are the kinds of chemicals that are being used. And that requires, constant testing, etc. Also, one needs to then go into treaty negotiations to actually begin to have global regulations on this, right? So of the 16,000 chemicals, I think 4,000 odd chemicals currently have already been established to have hazardous status, but only 100 and maybe 130 of them actually have global regulations on them, right? So this is actually the scale or the magnitude of the problem. There's complete lack of transparency in the entire supply chain. There's unregulated use of chemicals that we are unaware of. And we're constantly thinking about, whether this disposal mechanism is better than another. But it's really just substitutions, right? We already know these are harming us. So I think we really need to just avoid these regrettable substitutions and, talk about the entire lives.
Right. Now, one big argument, when it comes to the reluctance of nations to reduce plastic dependency, when I say nations, let's include India also, in this. We are plastics dependent to a large extent, and we don't want to, it's reflected in our stance in these negotiations. We don't really want to give up on plastic. And one of the main reasons is that they are cheap, the marginalized sections, they sort of depend on it, they go to it for various purposes. And at the same time, critics of this line also point out that the plastics are cheap only because of subsidies to the petrochemical or plastic industries. Now, in the case of India, are there a lot of subsidies that make plastics cheap, or is plastic organically, so to speak, cheap in India?
It's interesting that you actually raised this issue, Sampath. Last year, there was a report on the lifetime economic cost of plastics. And I think the data said that for plastics produced in 2019 alone, the economic lifetime cost of plastic was $3.7 trillion, right? And this, I think, is more than even the current GDP of the country of India, right? $3.7 trillion. The report went on to say that you know, the burden of this plastic pollution was actually being borne by low-income countries, despite consuming less plastic. And they are incurring a lifetime cost that is almost 10 times higher than developed countries, right? So there are structural inequalities and inequities that have been built into the current plastic value chain that not only distribute the burden of plastic pollution unequally among countries, but they further place this burden disproportionately on more vulnerable communities within our countries, right? So if you take the case of India alone, I think, like I was saying, that, you know, Forever Chemicals or these hazardous chemicals, only 25% have really been assessed. There's no regulation, there's no information, and so we can have no attribution and no liability. If there is an accident in the country, like, you know, you've had the gas leaks, even as recently as Manali in Chennai, I'm not even going back as far back as Bhopal, right? It's very difficult to get any compensation. Land has been given away, given to Adani, Ambani at throwaway prices. There is a viability gap funding for establishing petrochemical infrastructure. I think it's up to 20% of the project value is available as viability gap funding, right? Allowing plastic companies to continue to pollute through poor monitoring, through the weak implementation of the producer regulations or responsibilities, providing subsidies through Swachh Bharat Mission or Smart City Mission, or even renewable energy for waste to energy plants, right? These are all subsidies that the government of India is providing to the plastics and petrochemicals industrial complex in our country. Now, like I said, in the 13th ministerial conference, the WGO's ministerial conference, many of these regulations worldwide are actually being passed by lesser developing countries or least developing countries. So why not India? Why is India not also prioritizing its own people over the profits for a few? I think we really need to talk about, you know, this is actually artificially making a material artificially cheap, while some of the real alternatives are actually so expensive artificially that they have gone out of circulation.
Real alternatives are so expensive artificially, as in, like, could you elaborate on that?
Sure. So, for instance, something that I had been thinking about with respect to why leaf plates and leaf cups are not so commonly available is that the market supply chains for accessing those leaf plates, which are actually culturally, I'm from Orissa, I'm currently living in Calcutta, it's actually culturally very appropriate to have our food on these leaf plates and cups. You know, street food is served on leaf plates and cups. The market systems are completely broken because tribals and forest dwellers who could harvest these sustainably are unable to access this natural resource, right? Another kind of resource is Indian sheep wool. It is a natural biodegradable material that is naturally flame retardant, right? It is a natural insulant.
Sorry, say that again. What is this naturally available material? Indian sheep wool.
Sheep wool, yeah.
Okay.
Right? So India has about 75 million sheep. And several million tons of the sheep wool are actually literally thrown away as waste, even though this is such a wondrous insulant and can replace polystyrene. Most of our uses of polystyrene. So, you know, when you have these packaging of these consumer durables like air conditioners or ovens or geysers or whatever, many of them internally have some thermal insulation, as well as they come wrapped, they have this rigid foam packaging. Sheep wool can be actually used for this. Sheep wool can be used for mulching sheets or even nursery grow bags, right? It can be used to pack our fragile fruits, glasses, equipment. But this has been artificially made more expensive because India chose to impose subsidies or has reduced import subsidies on sheep wool that is imported from New Zealand, the Netherlands, and Russia. Right? So Indian sheep wool is literally being thrown away. And it's a fantastic material. It can be used for building and construction insulation material and all this packaging that I was talking about, right? And so if India could change some of this, you know, we have the natural material, we had the technical know-how, we used to have the machinery, which is now, of course, being crowded out. But it's very easy to revive these things.
Right. So given all these factors, Satyarupa, do you think there is a mismatch between the crisis in India and India's position in these negotiations?
Absolutely, Sampath. I think we really, you know, we should look at the data, we should look at the science. The country actually generates about 5.5 million tons or to 6 million tons of single-use plastic waste, right? But even just the ban, which is a welcome measure, the single-use plastic ban, only targets about 0.6 million tons of all of this plastic waste, right? This is only about 11% of all of the plastic waste that we're generating in our country. The industry themselves have estimated that the ban only addresses 2 to 3% of all the plastics that we are producing in our country, right? So if the data itself says this, the industry also says this, then why do we have a ban that is, you know, it's welcome, but it's absolutely not comprehensive and holistic? In 2019, I think there was a report that said that India was the 13th largest investor in single-use plastic polymer production globally. And of this, Reliance is actually producing about 3 million tons of this. UNEP's report, UNEP, says that India is mismanaging 85% of its waste, right? So why are we not addressing, you know, why do we not listen to this data? Instead, I think what we are seeing is false solutions like incineration or plastic credits, plastic neutrality. These are things that have known to have failed, right? Plastic credits are basically, we're basically having the rehash of these dubious market schemes that we had for the carbon, in the carbon situation, right? We had the same carbon offsets, carbon neutrality, and that's failed. We have not been able to achieve the targets that we need to. At the same time, what the country has done is invested in incinerators or waste-to-energy plants. I think the first incinerator in India was established in 1987. I think at that time, it cost 20 crores, and it failed within 20 days, right? I'm talking only about the country. And even then, we keep wanting to have incinerators. Of the 14, I think, that were approved, 7 have already shut down. And they're only artificially kept up, like Okhla in Delhi, is only operational because the, you know, the high courts and the Supreme Court says that this is the only viable way to dispose of plastic pollution or plastic waste, sorry, right? So we're really not listening to the data. We're not listening to the science. India has actually failed to really choose between going plastic free and promoting a plastic based economy.
Right. I mean, so there's clearly a mismatch here between what India needs to do to protect its environment and to address the plastic pollution crisis and what it's actually doing, which is basically, I think, in a sense, protecting the industry, the plastic industry and the profits that are involved there. One last question before I let you go. So with the treaty negotiations coming up this month, what needs to happen for India to revise its current orientation, you know, from this focus on downstream and incinerators and banning of, you know, single-use plastic, which, as you said, you know, just 2% or less than that, which is what is it's able to address, and 85% of India's waste is being mismanaged. So what needs to happen for India to sort of make a course correction in view of these negotiations and to sort of move away from having its eye on short-term economic gains and looking at protecting biodiversity, looking at climate crisis, you know, and looking at reducing this plastic dependency to go plastic-free as well? Very quick response, yeah.
Yeah, so I think India can take, you know, they may not be easy. And of course, these are political decisions. But the first among them is for India to agree that, you know, voting is an acceptable form of decision making, right? We have that in elections. I mean, elections are coming up in the country. We do use voting as an acceptable way. And so too in the UN process, I think India should support this. It is really a small group of countries that have large business interests in oil and plastics, like Saudi Arabia, Russia, China, and the US, that are constantly talking about consensus. This is one way to basically derail the treaty negotiation. The second is that India really should respect the original mandate of the resolution that called for an international legally binding treaty instrument, right, with a full life cycle approach, and that should be science-based. I think India really needs to respect that. The language there was clear, and many of the elements paper, elements presented by the UNEP documents actually is fairly clear, and India can support many of those. The next is that along with the reduction in the primary polymer production, we need to also address chemicals of concern, right? Like I said, there are 16,000 plus chemicals, and several of them have already been established to be hazardous and toxic. These are forever chemicals, they're persistent, they accumulate in our environment, in our bodies, and they're basically intergenerational, right? So we should listen to the science. One of the easier ones, so all of this is upstream. In the midstream, India can actually talk about product redesign, packaging redesign, and service redesign. Reuse is a fantastic way of easily bringing in both our cultural and traditional knowledge. We all use a lot of reusable utensils at home. Street vendors would actually, want to bring in reuse. We have the National Hawker Federation that's proposing a dishwashing center to allow or to enable street vendors to actually transition away from single-use plastic to reuse.
So when you say reuse, do you mean, when you say reuse, you mean reuse of plastic also?
We're talking about reusable. I mean, yes, there are some reusable plastics, but that really does not reduce plastic production. So ideally, we should be choosing materials.
When you say reuse, you are talking about materials that are not plastic, which should be reused, not plastic reuse.
There is some science, and there are some advocates for reusable plastics. I'm not one of those. I would rather suggest that we use metal, whether it's steel, or aluminium or glass, for example. These are all reusables, right? And we used to have Coke bottles in glass bottles. Milk used to be dispensed in machines. So there's basically a whole range of options that are available. And of course, we would have critics that say that the environmental impact is more. I guess one really needs to talk about, again, I think the life cycle assessment of plastics, which pollute right from extraction all the way to disposal. And that never goes. Right. So, I think that would make for another podcast, Sampath. But yes, I'm talking about reusables. That I am personally taking a position that it would be non-plastic materials. I would also add here that India, in the previous round of negotiations, actually made a statement saying that even reuse is debatable, because a lot of poor people and poor countries actually reuse plastic. Now, this concept of reuse is actually, it needs to be a systems level change, right? The production systems need to design a product for reuse. The onus or the burden should not fall on the consumers to choose reuse. So that is the difference between, I choosing to reuse a plastic bag or a plastic bottle at an expense to myself, whether it's a health cost or whatever, versus a company actually choosing reuse. It chooses reuse in the manufacturing of its products and the delivery systems. And that's what we need to do. And lastly, I guess what India needs to think about is a transition for all affected communities, workers. As the plastic industry declines, we need to transition those workers. And there are alternatives. The khadi industry, the jute industry, all of these have been artificially suppressed. For example, I'm not sure if in the previous podcast we talked about this, but last year, it was the first time that the Indian flag was allowed to be made in with polyester, right? After 75 years of making our Indian flag with khadi, we allowed it to be used made by polyester. And this clearly favors Reliance, right? We need to hold these polluting industries and companies accountable. They should not be allowed to participate in the negotiations. And, they should be kept out of the entire treaty process, whether it is the climate negotiations or the plastic negotiations. We really must take a stand about keeping polluters out. And there is precedence. In the WHO's tobacco convention, the tobacco industry was kept out.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think that, thank you for a very good sort of a roundup summary of India's position here. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. Pleasure talking to you.
In Focus will be back soon.
with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.